in some way, Jeremy's just shown us their life's getting harder, not easier. So it's good. We're getting more understanding of maybe what goes into the model, which, if I put it in my words, we know is wrong. We're getting more models, so we've got more choices to make. To give us a perspective on having to make those choices, our next speaker is Michael Lonergan. So Michael's the CFO of RACQ Insurance. Michael's got a background of over 14 years in accounting and finance, and Michael's got a not easy task. He looks after the actuaries, he looks after the accountants, and he looks after the reinsurance department. So to give us some insights into how maybe we can turn this into our decision making for running our business, please welcome Michael.
Thanks, Scott. I actually was just sitting there kind of reflecting on this task I've been given and almost thinking I was going to come up here and sound a little silly talking about how we use CAT models given all their problems and issues. But nevertheless, I'll start and give you a bit of an overview of what we do. So we've heard a lot about the models and their issues, lots of challenges for us going forward in the future. And I'm just going to give you an overview of what we do at a client level, how we use those models, some of the things we've done to mitigate these issues and risks that have been highlighted by the wider community. And I'll talk about some of the improvement opportunities we've been able to gather from our peril work, for example, and how we've been able to use CAT risk tools as one of the tools in managing risk, overall risk, but not... importantly, not as the only tool. So natural catastrophe risk, we've talked about that. Jeremy touched on it quite a bit. It's really quite a core risk for a personal lines insurer, and particularly a personal lines insurer based in Queensland. The management of CAT risk will permeate through the organisation. It'll be in your risk management framework, through your ICAP and your capital processes, obviously your reinsurance program. It'll permeate into your pricing areas, your risk accumulations, even your claims department. It really does push through the entire organisation. And then when we look at making sure we've got a good governance framework around that, I've listed up there some of the key elements. So the board's risk appetite, I'll jump to a slide on that in a moment, so that's obviously pretty key. Making sure you've got the appropriate level of management oversight. So, your CFO, your CROs, your CEOs, your appointed actuary, or making sure that they've all got the appropriate level of buy-in in the process along the way. And then external oversight is kind of ever increasing. So obviously the appointed actuary is very involved. Your appointed auditor continues to get more and more involved in this management of catastrophe risk and understanding what you're doing with models, even your reviewing actuary. So it's becoming quite an important element of your overall governance framework. Data and assumptions. I'm talking today at an Actuaries Institute. I probably don't need to dwell too much on the importance of data and assumptions. However, really got to make sure it's got good focus. The data that's extracted out for CAT models can often be seen as a bit of a mechanical task. So making sure it's got the right levels of approval and the right level of prominence at a management level through proper sign-offs, I think, is also a sound tool in managing that CAT risk. Having a robust approach to catastrophe modelling. We've heard about all the problems with vendor models. So what can you do to overcome those? And I'm going to talk about that later on here today. And then lastly, having an appropriate reinsurance program. Reinsurers, quite a few of them really love CAT models. They probably depend on them perhaps a little bit too much. So they're a necessary component of your overall placement of reinsurance. So again, what are some of the things we can do to kind of lessen those risks that have been highlighted? I'll just go back to the board, making sure it's got a risk appetite that's dedicated to catastrophe risk. That it should really be a core element. It should be a focus of any of your board workshops. Talk about what kind of losses in a reverse stress test sense might be able to break your company. Having those discussions in a formal workshop, talking things about assumptions, approaches to modelling, return periods, and getting them all documented as part of your risk appetite, I think, is key to the governance framework. Then in terms of actually translating that into reinsurance and then educating your board, having a formal presentation, I think, is pretty critical as well. Having your experts along to give the board the requisite knowledge. CAT risk or CAT modelling is quite a specific skill, so being able to distill what's gone into models, how models have been run, and then present that to a board can be quite a challenge. So make sure you're prepared for that. Educating directors is always interesting. It's you know, from time to time we get new directors on, and particularly those directors who don't have general insurance experience, it can be quite eye-opening to explain to them the level of gross liabilities that general insurers are exposed to and how we manage that then through our capital frameworks, you know, particularly reinsurance. It can actually be a little bit sobering when you kind of have those discussions. So making sure you've got the appropriate board skills is pretty critical in your overall governance framework. And then lastly, making sure everything's well documented and appropriate for your organisation. You know, peril risk and nat cat will be more dominant for insurers like the one I work for relative to others. So making sure you've kind of got the right level of governance relative to your organisation is critical. So where are we using cat model outputs to manage overall approach to natural catastrophe risk management? Portfolio management, they're playing more and more role as an input into our direct pricing. And I'm going to touch on that in a moment and some of the things we've been able to do to help understand how cat models work. There's exposure management help as well. And then down to reinsurance. Obviously, it helps us place our reinsurance programs, both in terms of limits, sideway covers, negotiations with your reinsurers, and when you're kind of talking pricing, it's all critical for that. And then capital management, it's a pretty critical tool in that as well. And there's more and more work going into our capital modelling to use vendor inputs, but to kind of overlay that with things we've done internally, actual experience that you've incurred yourself, or industry experience, and then getting a blend. And blend's a word I'm going to touch on a bit today, because I think that's one of the things we're doing to mitigate that risk of the problems that we see with cat risk, cat models, is blending them with other learnings. So model selection. So we've got vendor models, and I think we've heard all about that today. Their issues, the depth of comprehension of Australian risk. It's challenged. You know, I think it is, you know, certainly in terms of updates and learnings, I don't think they're fed back obviously into Australia anywhere near as much as they are for other regions. So, you know, relying blindly on vendor models is going to put yourself at risk. So then what can you do to mitigate that? So you can do some access to local models through other experts. That can be quite critical, and in-house as well. Although in saying in-house, it's not just quite an easy thing to do. You know, cat modelling is a specific skill. It's not just a series of spreadsheets that you can kind of throw to someone in the corner. It's actually something that needs to be built up over time. But if you're actually able to access a local model, you're going to get a chance to incorporate some of your actual experience. And I'll touch on that again in a moment. There's nothing like being able to actually go in and see an event post-event and see how some of those assumptions you had, how they actually stacked up. You can use those kind of models to help you with your peril work so that you can actually price your direct risk more accurately. And that ultimately gives us a better understanding and a more intimate of overall risk. So I think having a balanced approach to vendor and in-house or local models is one big step in trying to overcome some of these issues we've got with vendor models. So post-event experience. As Scott introduced me, I work for RSEQ, so we're a kind of company that's been exposed to our key perils from time to time through cyclones. So there's nothing like actually being able to go on ground, and not just from a claims perspective, but get the underwriters or the people that help you know, work with some of your in-house modelling to actually see what's happened. And this can actually be quite a useful tool that you can then feed back into your processes and your interpretation of model results. We also collect a lot of claims data through that process as well. So being able to kind of take that claims data, the pre-underwriting data that you had, analyse how those assumptions actually stacked up in terms of, or in face of actual experience, and then being able to tweak those. And that gives us an ability to understand our key perils at a much more intimate level than whatever we're going to get out of just looking at a series of numbers that spit out of a vendor model. So again, I think being able to have that blended approach is pretty critical. And then all those findings we can feed back into two things, our direct pricing work and then our understanding of cat modelling. So then in terms of how we've used cat models to price risk, The challenge here is to blend all the knowledge. As general insurers, we kind of understand our risks quite well. We spend a lot of time when people put a quote in or take out a policy to understand what their risk is like in terms of building stock, the age, when was the building built, what's its roof type, how many stories, etc. So all that data we collect. We've got some claims experience, so we can mix that into the models. We've got vendor model outputs. So being able to pull all that together and then overlay that with a continuous improvement is one critical step for us in managing that kind of that risk we see with vendor model outputs and not being quite being able to understand them. So if you can overlay all that and push it into pricing work, I think it again helps give you that deeper, intimate level of understanding. And I'm just going to give you a bit of an example of what we've been doing in recent years. Now, address level risk rating is becoming quite a feature for the industry, and the level of granularity of that is going to be dependent on quite a number of things: your diversification, your exposure to risk, your risk appetite, and those type of things are all critical in your overall assessment of how granular you want to get with understanding these perils. One thing which we've been able to do is work with vendor models, work with local models, and local experts as well. I think there was a slide up before with a circle of people like mathematicians, geologists, etc. So where you can access that data and blend it into the mix, it gives you quite a useful and a much more powerful way of rating risk. And then being able to overlay that with post-event experience, again, gives you further learnings. And I'll I've got a little bit grainy here, but here's just a little bit of a map. So this kind of shows you some of the work we've done in terms of understanding one of our less dominant perils, and then kind of just being able to rate that on all those different factors. And I think the thing out of it for us when we've done this is it's really helped us understand the peril. It's particularly then you actually experience that peril, as I said before, being able to feed that back in. To your learnings and your decision making is quite critical. But again, I think one of the critical things for us is we've got vendor models, we've got their outputs, but they're not their only tool. We are balancing this with things like our peril work and our post-claims experience. And if I think back to where we came from 5 years ago, or even earlier, a lot of this work was really in its infancy for us. We understood our risk, but being able to apply those understandings and learnings for a widespread portfolio was difficult. Jeremy touched on the ability or the advantages we've got through IT. So that's certainly helping us into understand our overall portfolios and how they respond to different perils. I think for us, the challenge is to continue to refine this work. And this aids both in our decision-making at the point of the original risk, and then in our decision-making around our reinsurance programs and how we're managing our natural catastrophe risk exposure. So I think, in summary, I probably said it quite a few times, but I think that's for us the key is this blended approach. We've got vendor models, we've got in-house experience, we've got post-event experience, so we can kind of blend all that together and to give us a better outcome in terms of managing that risk of natural catastrophes. If we turn to reinsurance program design, again, taking a blended approach here can be quite useful. If you've got access to multi-models, I think this is something that is quite useful when you're talking to your boards in terms of your upper limits. If you can then overlay that with actual event experience so you can understand and make better decisions, I think that also is quite useful. Unmodeled perils is pretty critical as well in terms of your overall reinsurance setting. I'm not going to talk too much about those today, but what you can learn from is how you're rating those unmodeled perils. So, if you've done some work to build an underwriting tool to understand that from a pricing sense, you can feed that into your reinsurance decision processes as well. I touched on multi-model before, for those of us out there that use or have access to a number of models, you'll see tables that'll be similar to this, where you've kind of got just a range of numbers, you've got differences in terms of this model here is higher at the top but lower at the bottom, and that probably is probably well more pronounced for quite a few of us. So what do we do in terms of selecting there? I suppose the starting point is there's no right answer. it's about taking a considered approach to it. And again, all those things I talked about in terms of looking at your other things such as historical experience, your in-house modelling, what your board's risk appetite is, what their accepted reinsurance practices as well. You're going to have reinsurers who rely on models and outputs. They're key in discussions around reinsurance setting. If you can use a set of model outputs that help in that decision, or that negotiation phase as well, that can be one of the considerations you can put into it. But as I said at the start, there's no right answer, but it's about kind of understanding your models, the vendor models, and your claims experience, and then being able to kind of feed all that into an overall decision-making process. Now, it wouldn't be a talk today on catastrophe risk governance without touching on APRA. And I've kind of purposely put, I suppose, APRA at the back, not as a to decry them, but certainly just to say that I think one of the opening comments, perhaps from Will, was in Lachlan's speech last year, whether he was wondering if the industry was really thinking about this enough. And I think the answer is, to a large degree, particularly for us insurers who are exposed to natural catastrophes. The setting your top of your reinsurance program on an annual basis is one of the biggest decisions you make as an insurer on a year-to-year basis. So it's something that's not taken lightly. We are relying on things such as models to help us. Yes, that's true. But there are things that we're able to do to kind of manage that process and give us a better outcome and a better set of governance around it. So I think if we look at all the different elements I've talked to today, if we kind of manage all those properly, that's just good business practice, and that should really put us in good stead for meeting APRA's GPS requirements. And I mentioned there in continuous improvement, and it really should have been a flavour through the rest of my slides, because it's certainly pretty critical that you continue to improve and evolve these processes. We've heard that the vendors are doing that, in-house, is just as important to continue to improve those processes. And then I think as well, making sure that's all well documented and appropriate to the organisation is pretty critical as well. So then just kind of wrapping that all up, insurers, we've got a need for catastrophe models and their outputs. They are very useful. However, they're not the only tool and we shouldn't be blind to them. And I don't think many of us have been. We realise it's just one part of the overall process. The work we do around peril rating and our claims and post-event experience is pretty critical as well. So that allows us to give an overall balanced approach. And then ensuring that governance is well documented and robust and appropriate to your organisation is pretty critical. And then from a board perspective, make sure that they've got a clearly defined risk appetite. And make sure they understand the risk. Trying to make sure that they understand, especially that residual risk after you've kind of overlaid a reinsurance program, what could they potentially be left with is something that could often be quite a big discussion and should be a big discussion at board meetings. In terms of APRA, if we manage all those fundamentals, then we really should be in a good place to manage our APRA requirements. And in the future, I see this really probably where the work that we do internally to better rate original risk is going to be a pretty critical platform for us to go forward in both better understanding the vendor models, but also helping us build our own models, and then ultimately leading to an overall better management of catastrophe risks. Probably just in conclusion, I think just as general insurers, we've got our eyes open. Models are just models. I've run through a number of strengths and improvement opportunities and things we do to manage that risk. And I think we're heading on the right path. And I think it's something that together with actuaries and scientists, etc., we can all kind of manage at a better level. So, thank you.